It's a pleasure to be here, to be given the opportunity to speak with you today. A lot of familiar faces in the audience. And I guess it started off on a rocky note. Craig already slammed me, commodity packer. So I've got to use this presentation to try to right that or turn it around. Craig mentioned the spread, $18 per hunter today. If you take an average carcass weight of 750 pounds, that's $135 a head. So it's big time shortage relative to the demand of choice beef right now, as current as we are in the industry. I guess the other thing with what's happened north of our border, you'll notice that ground beef, lean trim, has really exploded. I think record high prices on 50-50 trim relative to that aspect. I think it's well in the 80 cent range. It was 83 early in the week. It's even higher now. Craig, I'll start the clock now. But I want to share with you a little bit some of the thoughts that we have relative to the target. And again, I'd preface my comments by saying it really hadn't changed. Now, I'll have one new slant that I'd add, but 2 weeks ago, we did an industry tour of our key accounts. These included not only food service, but retail customers, and these items were top of mind for them relative to the comments that they brought back to us. Number one, food safety, and I think Jim's already mentioned that. Everybody obviously has to stay on top of that. Secondly, they're concerned, or there is a growing concern for increased weight or size of cattle carcasses and cuts. We're just as guilty of that as anyone in the industry, and obviously I think it starts with us relative to sending the signals on grids. But end users are starting to get concerned with that, not only to control portion size or price point in food service, but as we go to more and more case-ready programs, it's got to fit the tray, and you want to be able to maintain some thickness of steaks and obviously roast. Inconsistencies in quality, cutability, and tenderness. This is an ongoing concern. It's been mentioned in all three of the national beef quality audits. It's still on their mind. And obviously, number four, and Jim already alluded to it, cool. We are a major packer. We are obviously devoted to brands. XL has always had a long-standing philosophy that you need to differentiate yourselves from the commodity world. These represent three of our oldest brands. The one on the bottom right, obviously, is the G1. It's certified Angus beef. G19 is our Angus Pride that starts at the middle of small marbling. And G2 is our Sterling Silver. Another aspect about this slide, it's actually a lighting experiment of different lights we have in our plants. The least desirable one, we hate this light. We kind of like this one, and obviously this one looks pretty natural. But brands, we're committed to brands. They want to see those grow because they do set you apart. Now, in the proceedings, I listed two primary paths to branded beef. And that's not to leave out other avenues, which I think other speakers will allude to, whether you're catering to the diet health conscious or whatever. But I wanted to focus on a large volume basis on two general approaches. One is you could choose the qualitative approach, or you could go the quantity route, and we've seen some market penetration in both of these paths. XL has been a quality-driven branded program or packing company for quite some time. We've tried to cater to premium markets, deal with upscale beef, and so we've been heavily devoted to marbling. Got to have marbling deposition to be able to deliver on those. With Walmart's launch and others, you've seen more of a quantitative approach. It's more of a commodity mindset, everyday beef. It requires enhancement or marination and normally added water. And that added water can be anywhere to the tune of 9 to 12% of raw product weight. So it's added water. You've seen it first in the pork industry. I think it'd be easy to estimate right now that approximately 60% of all pork, fresh pork sold at retail is enhanced. And so you see beef going somewhat down that trail is one of the paths. Now I want to talk about some of the traits that pertain to that and where differences arise relative to which ones you emphasize or place less emphasis on as you try to achieve them. Several traits are equally important regardless of whether you focus on quality or quantity. Controlling weight, controlling muscling, and I have this in the form of ribeye size so it fits the trays and so forth, or for food service. Injection site blemishes are a problem regardless of which avenue you take. Food safety and the proceedings, I think I listed them as similar. I put one less emphasis point on it from a quantitative approach just because if you manufacture enhanced beef, it's no longer considered intact muscle. It's been penetrated on the surface, and so it is a little higher risk as far as going that extra step. You can't necessarily refer to it as an all-natural product, as you heard Jim mention or define earlier. It's been processed to a certain extent. As I mentioned earlier, on the qualitative approach, you've got to put a heavy emphasis on marbling. On the quantitative approach, less emphasis because you're going to pump the quality in. You're going to add spices and flavorings and other ingredients. Yield grade, a little less emphasis on quality because you know you have to allow animals to fatten to be able to deposit marbling. Implant program, you can't run wild if you want marbling deposition, and to increase the percentage of premium carcasses, you could be more aggressive in the enhanced approach. Need more control on animal age. And the last two here, you've got to be committed to producers. You've got to work with alliances and others because, again, if you don't, you won't necessarily hit all of these targets. And so information sharing, information feedback is key. On the quantitative approach, you can procure those cattle on the open market because you're going to add value to them later through enhancement. So cost of production, the cost of controlling your implants, moderating production, controlling some other aspects, oftentimes more expensive genetics used to start that side of the fence, costs are oftentimes higher. Okay? We've been working for over 10 years now trying to better align or coordinate the supply chain all the way starting with genetics through to the end, either at retail or food service, to hopefully deliver to a consumer. How can we deliver better beef to consumers? How can we coordinate the supply chain to make the proper decisions? How can you better manage product usage spikes resulting from features? Features at retail, to a certain extent, some at food service, but really retail, really throw things out of whack. For example, we had a customer that launched a brand with us this month. They started out ordering 15 truckloads of short loins to do the launch. Found out through the middle of the week they were going to run short because they were selling T-bones at $3.99 a pound. Had to order an additional 7 truckloads. And so each animal only produces 2 short loins. And so what do you do with the rounds, the chucks, all of the thin meats and the grinds? Easily 50 to 60% of all beef sold at retail oftentimes moves on a feature. And so it puts a lot of pressure on balancing or coordinating utilization. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide, but many of you recall, you've oftentimes remember that we often use the quality grading system to try to estimate whether or not we'll deliver a desirable eating experience. The risk and premium choice is 1 out of 10 may not deliver up to standard. Low choice, 1 out of 6. Select, 1 out of 4. The only problem is 2/3 of the beef supply coming at us each and every day fall into those categories. We refer to that as the mountain of meat. We don't have a lot of trouble moving prime and premium choice. But what can you do to add value to the majority of the beef produced in North America? Suffice to say that historically, yes, we've been totally marbling driven. We do have programs, and other programs exist today that consider marbling as a threshold, with numerous other factors or technologies used then to either guarantee tenderness or some trait similar to that. We depend a lot, again, on working with producers, with key alliances that help us control cattle type, manage age, good health programs. We are firm believers in a minimum of 100 days on a high-concentrate diet for yearling-fed steers and heifers, and we like them to be identified individually. Some of our key alliances, Ranchers Renaissance, I think Rob Brown's in the audience, Friona Industries, we've got Western feed yards up in Alberta, in that area, and then some of our premium alliances, Angus America, Power Genetics, and others. We rely a lot upon technology, Bob Richmond's in the audience here today, and obviously RMS then supplies vision grading technology. We have it in all six of our major North American plants. Helps us sort carcasses based on ribeye size, fatness, color of fat, color of lean. We get over 27,000 individual carcasses scanned each and every workday. If you don't like the high marbling and you're looking for something middle of the road for everyday beef, you can emphasize that relative to looking for the combination of external fat, muscling, and marbling. We have an editor now. If we arise with problems in a plant, let's say during ribbing, part of the bone dust is left on an eye and cuts off a portion, undergrids the ribeye, underestimates its size, or there's also an area here where it traces an accessory muscle, we have the ability now to go in either at the plant or at headquarters and correct these images, record all the data, and put it in a data warehouse on each and every carcass that goes through. This is just showing the retracing of that actual ribeye to correct it. Very powerful data set. Our goals for vision grading is to get 95% of our daily harvest scanned. We do accomplish that today, and we're moving toward 99. We want to monitor our cattle buyers on an individual basis, as well as individual suppliers, our alliances, individual feed yards. We assess our cooler taggers and our USDA graders relative to their performance for sameness, plant to plant, shift to shift, hour to hour. And we also do that not only for quality and yield grading, but for brand certification. We drive our business off this technology. We send a carcass into FAB. The camera estimates what percent of that carcass should end up in saleable product. And so we use that to see whether or not our workmanship is up to par on trim levels, do they leave too much meat on the bone, whatever avenue they take to perhaps not hit par. And then lastly, we use technology to provide unique sorting strategies for customer solutions. The new brand that we've launched a couple of years ago, we refer to in-house as Rancher's Registry. It's based on a number of pre-harvest and post-harvest quality control points. Okay. We've launched it, first of all, at two Kroger divisions in May of 2001. We launched it in the Colorado region at King Supers and City Market stores. October of 2001 at Kroger, the Atlanta division. We've launched it in two banners of Sobeys north of the border in the Toronto region and in the Maritime. We've launched it on the East Coast with Harris Teeter. They've got about 145 stores. And here a couple of weeks ago, we launched it at a division of Safeway based out of Colorado that crosses five different states in 145 stores they have in that division. The reason they've gone to this is partially on consistency. It delivers on something more than just size, and these retailers can use it to differentiate themselves from their competitors. These two graphs, or these two curves, distributions, represent strip steaks from the same animal. The commodity side, or the blue side here, was conventionally processed. The red side here went through all of the quality control points. It was aged for 14 days. It received electrical stimulation. Several practices that we do at the plant level. Essentially, what you see is that you take those strip steaks and you reduce toughness by 3 pounds of Warner Brasler shear force, or improve tenderness by about 28%. You also notice that we tightened the tenderness value on what it delivers. We reduced variation by 45%, moved it to the more tender side. So using science, using technology, throwing everything at it that we know of to try to make it perform better relative to eating satisfaction actually can work. Shear tests weren't enough. We shipped steaks to Oregon State University where they did a consumer taste panel. They compared low choice strips to high select and low select. The blue are processed conventionally. The red go through all of the quality control points. In a blind taste test, regardless of the quality level, those consumer panelists selected the tenderness processed over the conventional process opposite side of the same carcass. We also shipped steaks to Texas A&M for their train panel. The tenderness processed steaks, 98% of them were rated moderately tender or better. six or higher on an 8-point scale. Only 28% of the opposite side of the same cattle. Most of the conventional processed were slightly tender. 13% were actually slightly tough. That means I got a little time left. Why are we so concerned about tenderness? Well, this is a chart. This research was actually conducted by Dr. Tommy Wheeler and his co-workers at the Meat Animal Research Center. And they took very tender strip steaks, as depicted here in blue, intermediate strip steaks in yellow, and somewhat tough strip steaks in red. They had multiple steaks from the same strip loins, and they cooked them either to rare, medium, or well done. And this is a shear force. Obviously, we start to get concerned with Warner Bratzler when it reaches 10 pounds or more. You'll notice that tender beef can handle more extreme endpoint degrees of doneness regardless of the consumer preference. Intermediate tenderness steaks start to get a little shaky once you leave medium. And tough beef won't perform regardless of how you cook it unless you go to moist heat. And so it's important to start with something good to begin with, I think. And it's more easily than to accommodate various taste preferences in the consuming public. What about carcass weight? This is a range here of about 550 to 950 pounds. Go ahead, Elizabeth. This is the trend for our company and our five U.S. plants since 1997, when we started out averaging about 735 pounds of carcass weight. This year, and our fiscal year ends this week, we're averaging 787 pounds. There were numerous consecutive weeks where we exceeded 800, but I'd say the last 6 weeks we've really buffered back on weight. But that's a 52-pound increase in carcass weight in approximately 5 years. Still going up. What about yield grades? Recall, 1 is the highest red meat yield, 5 is the lowest red meat yield, so yield grade 4s or 5s are often discouraged. This is a yield grade 5. If you look at close-trim product today, it's obviously the commodity. Very few, if any, people take commodity trim anymore, so you've got to get it down to a quarter inch or less. What's happened to the trend in yield grade? In our five U.S. plants, USDA stamped or called 1.7% yield grade 4s in our fiscal year 2000. So that would be fall of 2000 through spring of 2001. 2001, they stamped 3.3%. That's a 94% increase in Y4s and 5s. This year, we're running 5%. That's another 52% increase from our previous fiscal year. So are we leaning up beef? Camera data doesn't show that much change. I will tell you, though, that USDA graders are focusing on becoming more accurate on yield grade 4s, and any of you that have marketed on a grid, I've seen this start moving since last fall as far as calling more fours. As far as tenderness is concerned, I showed you some Warner Bratzler data today. I just want to remind that in the future, if you do tenderness testing, we are very strong supporters of the Meat Animal Research Center slice shear test. Last fall, we changed our laboratory to do slice shear. That's the wave of the future relative to mechanical tenderness measurement. We really like the device. It's simpler, less prone to variation as far as in some operator things. We really like it, and we see some retailers even using it. So slice shear is the wave of the future. To conclude, today's and tomorrow's target, as was previously mentioned, it's important to have a safe food supply. We think that individual animal ID is important. Balanced production performance and carcass merit. Avoid outs, as Jim's already mentioned. We still have dark cutters, some carcasses coming at us with advanced maturity scores and blood splash. Try to control carcass weight, even though our operations team really like the heavy ones as well. Produce high select or better carcasses. Target for a vision yield grade of 3.4 or better. Upper half of yield grade 3 we think is still too fat. We need moderate muscling. Ribeye ranges of 10 to 15, 9, and tenderness. Tenderness is here to stay. I'd say target or shoot for a slice shear force of 22 kilograms or lower at 14 days of aging. Don't get in a tenderness race, but if we could do anything to find the tough ones, the outliers, they're much more difficult to change. I don't want us to create small ribeyes Jersey-type confirmation by going overboard on tenderness, just reduce those that cause the problem. With that, Craig, appreciate the time and opportunity. Thank you.